During the remainder of the night, the sound of firing toward Dakeshi Ridge indicated that the 7th Marines were having a lot of trouble trying to push the Japanese off the ridge. Just before dawn, we could hear heavy firing off to our left front, where 1-5 and 2-5 were fighting around the Awacha pocket.
"Stand by, you guys, and be prepared to move out," came the order from an NCO on the embankment above us.
"What's the hot dope?"
a mortarman asked.
"Don't know, except the Nips are counterattacking on the 5th Marines' front, and the battalion 3-5 is on standby to go up and help stop 'em."
We greeted the news with an understandable lack of enthusiasm. We were still tired and tense from the punishment the battalion took at Awacha the day before. What's more, we didn't relish moving anywhere in the darkness. But we squared away our gear, chewing gum nervously or gnawing on ration biscuits. The sound of firing rose and fell to our left front as we waited and wondered. Finally, during the misty gray light of early morning, the order came.
"Okay, you guys, let's go."
We picked up our loads and moved toward the front lines. Other than occasional shells whining over in both directions, things were rather calm. Our column moved along a ridge just below the crest to the emplacements of the Marines who had been under attack. We found them assessing the damage they had done to the Japanese and caring for their own wounded. Some of the men told us the enemy had come into bayonet range before being repulsed.
"But we tore their ass up, by God," one man said to me, as he pointed out at about 40 Japanese corpses sprawled beyond the Marine foxholes.
In the pale dawn, the air was misty and still smoky from phosphorus shells the enemy had fired to hide their approach. There was a big discussion in the ranks. Comments passed along to us from the Marines in place had it that somebody had seen a woman advancing with the attacking Japanese, and that she was probably among the dead out there. We couldn't see her from our positions. Then word came,
"About face, we're moving back."
In short, our help wasn't needed, so we were to be deployed somewhere else. Back through the rain and the mud we went. All movements during most of May and early June were physically exhausting and utterly exasperating because of the mud. Typically, we moved in single file, 5 paces apart, slipping and sliding up and down muddy slopes and through boggy fields. When the column slowed or stopped, we tended to bunch up. The NCOs and officers ordered sternly,
"Keep your 5-pace interval, don't bunch up."
The ever-present danger of shells, even far behind the lines, made it necessary that we stay strung out. However, sometimes it was so dark that in order not to get separated and lost, each man was ordered to hold onto the cartridge belt of the man in front of him. This made the going difficult over rough and muddy terrain. Often if a man lost his footing and fell, several others went down with him, sprawling over each other in the mud. There were muffled curses and exasperated groans as they wearily disentangled themselves and regained their footing, groping about in the inky darkness to reform the column.